Israel is going to continue killing the Palestinians. They continue to kill the Palestinian journalists because no one is standing up to stop them. But I have bad news for Israel. I have bad news for Netanyahu. The bad news for him is that the Palestinian journalists are not going to be silenced. That the Palestinian journalists are going to continue speaking up. They continue reporting. They will continue reporting despite all the odds, despite all the risks, despite all the threats. The Palestinian journalists are going to live and continue despite all of that. The Palestinian journalists will live and continue. And despite all of that, we will honor the Palestinian journalists. We will say their names. We will repeat their stories. We will share them with the world. The Palestinian journalists who were killed will not be forgotten. We will not forget them. We will not allow their stories to be silenced. We here in the West and in the East, we will raise their voices. We will raise their pictures. We will celebrate their lives forever. And more Palestinian journalists will speak up. And more Palestinian journalists will speak up. And more Western journalists will join us in our protests. They will join us. You will join us in immortalizing the Palestinian stories. We will not go anywhere. The Palestinians will not go anywhere. And we will continue. We will continue to report the news. And the Palestinian journalists, they know. They know that reporting the news from Gaza has become a risk. The Palestinian journalists are writing their wells. They know that they could be targeted. They know that they could be killed. But they're risking their lives so that you know the truth. So please do not forget them. Please do not forgive those who killed them. Please do not forget the Palestinian journalists. And finally, I would like to read to you the will of Maryam Abu Dakka, the journalist that Israel killed a few days ago. Before she died, she wrote her will to her child, Ghaith, and she said, Ghaith, heart of soul of your mother, I want you to pray for me and not to cry over me so that I can remain happy. I want you to always make me proud, to work hard, excel, and be capable. I want you to become successful, my beloved. My dear, I hope that you will never forget me. Everything I have done was only to make you happy, to keep you joyful and comfortable, and to provide everything for you. And when you grow up, get married, and have a daughter, name her Maryam after me. You are my love, my heart, my support, my soul, and my son, who I am proud of. I will always be happy hearing of your good reputation. I ask of you one thing, Ghaith, your prayer, and your prayer, my dear, your mother, Maryam. That was the will of Maryam Abu Dakka. Thank you.
I'm Dan Ashman. I do Life is Sacred vigils, and I'm here to join the vigil of journalists that have been killed in Gaza because they've been targeted deliberately by the Israeli forces.
We've heard that actually there's more journalists being killed here than all the major wars for the last 200 years.
Well, that shows that it's a policy, doesn't it? It shows that there's a deliberate attempt to stem and create fear to stop people telling the truth about what's going on.
Well, one of the reasons that this is allowed to carry on is because British companies are making money from the genocide. And I know you went to visit the Financial Conduct Authority last week because they're supposed to oversee this. Obviously, it's completely criminal to be funding a genocide, to be trading with a genocidal country like Israel.
Yeah, and what they're saying is that they need the Treasury, the MOD and the Foreign Office to provide a list of complicit companies so that they can sanction them. But they do still hold within their regulatory power a capacity to protect their shareholders from ill-gotten gains and criminal proceedings. So there still exists frameworks within their organisation to do things independently of the government.
What about, have they, because you wrote to them, have they responded?
I got a response saying that they will look into the matter, and then I phoned them yesterday to follow up on it, and then all of a sudden they didn't have enough information about me, and it was a different case number because they'd been swapped it over to someone else, and it became a computer says no situation. So what I would do is that I've revised the letter. I've got a template which actually uses just their terminology, just their regulations to forward to it. So I do need people to actually put that forward to them and probably take up that mantle a bit more, because I think they're going to avoid me now. So,
who's next on your list, or is that secret?
It's not secret. The next on my list is the Treasury, because they're meant to provide a list and get a list of sanctions. There's an office which is the sanction aspect of that department. So
this is things like, I mean, Russia, I guess, and Iran.
Yes. So they're very effective against Russia, especially Iran as well. But those where they're considered allies, they are aiding and abetting genocide. It's that simple. And that's against international law, that's against the Geneva Convention, it's against the desires and the designs of the population as well. No one really wants to be the contributing to genocide. I think that's probably one of the strong storylines which we've all kind of come out with from our conditioned culture, is that actually those things are atrocious and we don't stand for those things. But obviously the Crown does at the moment.
Well, you've told me before you were involved in, years ago, in Occupy, in the city. Because the city is this sort of bizarre jurisdiction outside, you know, even the king has got to ask permission when he goes into the City of London. It's where, during the Civil War, the plots were hatched to kill the king, for example. So that's maybe why they want to keep the royal family out. But what do you think, when you were doing the Occupy occupations back in the day, you ever thought that the financial institutions would be so corrupt that they would be consciously funding a genocide like this?
To me, it's not a huge surprise, if I'm honest. The Crown and the organisations, the businesses, have often made their fortunes through pillaging, through war, and through the obfuscation of language, this kind of game of politeness, but which goes on within it, just not mentioning it, not alluding to it. I'm not massively surprised. We had the Iraq War, didn't we? We've got some to date issues which have still not had any redress or remedy.
Well, look, we've got all the journalists here. Do you think they're on the case or not?
I think there are a lot of journalists that are on the case. I think that it's not a highly monetized arena, but I do think that people will gravitate towards truth. I think that that's what's happening. That's why they're losing the propaganda war, Israel are, and the mainstream media. And it's what, and rightly so, they should be outed, and they should be. We should create and generate our own, which is reflective of the truth.
So how do people find and follow you?
Well, you can get me on Twitter, and Daniel_Ashman. I'm on there, or Dan Ashman on Facebook. I'm yet to build the other platforms because I'm not massively digitally inclined, but I will endeavour to do that too. So there are things in the pipeline which need to be created in order to make it more accessible, I guess.
Okay, well, analog Dan Ashman outside Downing Street, opposite Downing Street, at the Journalist Vigil. To support the Gaza journalists who are being massacred, what we've been calling journocide. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Blessings.
Phil Sutcliffe. I'm a member of London Freelance Branch Committee. of the NUJ, and I'm just here to support the vigil for the obviously just cause that it is.
Why are the Israelis, do you think, specifically targeting journalists? It's pretty obvious they are.
Well, I suppose with any power that targets journalists, as does happen periodically all over the world, it's just to kill the news, to kill reporting of events. It must be. What else can you think? That's what it's about. I blocked out, of course, journalists from all other nations. And so they feel this appalling need to annihilate the Palestinian journalists as well.
I mean, there's several hundred people here. Many of them are journalists opposite Downing Street. Do you think this will make any difference?
I don't have many political principles, but one of them goes, we do what we can. Just that, we do what we can. This is what we can do.
So can you see an end to the journalists, killing of journalists? Can you see an end to the conflict? Do you think the UN might do anything or whatever?
Not only do I not have any powers of prediction, I don't really have any opinions on that. Who the hell can tell? I don't know. I don't know, Tony, not at all.
Are there any, do you think, news outlets that have been doing a really good job that people should be aware of?
Oh, the ones I think are doing a pretty good job, people already are aware of. I don't consume a wide range of media, but at least in recent months, the ones I do consume, which are The Guardian and the BBC on the whole, the BBC is enormous and its coverage is very diverse, but on the whole, I think they do a good job, on the whole, just on the whole, that's all. Nothing's perfect, and obviously they're not perfect, but they're really working at it now.
My name's Ben Thompson. I'm a freelance journalist of many years standing, but I have a very easy life compared to the people that are doing the great work in Gaza.
So do you think events like this really can change anything? We've had a letter from the NUJ delivered to Downing Street. We've got several hundred people here saying stop killing journalists. Can it change?
I don't think that will make any difference instantly, obviously, but I think it's very important for people who feel betrayed by their professional organisations, which I think any self-respecting journalist would do in this situation, to be able to actually make their individual statement to make up for the backup that these people should have been given by their employers.
Do you see, analysing what's going on in Gaza, any kind of end to this?
Well, it's not... I don't think we individuals have the power to envision that, but all you can do is honour the sacrifices of the people who are at the sharp end.
My name's Helen. And I'm just here because I'm a journalist, and to know that so other many journalists have been killed. Obviously, the whole atrocity in what's happening in Gaza is beyond belief, really. Shockingly, it's true.
I mean, it's one of the things that's been said repeatedly today is journalists are being deliberately targeted, that we've had more journalists killed in this conflict than in actually both world wars. So why?
Well, I think the evidence is there, isn't it? I mean, that they are trying to tell the truth, no doubt, and get stories out, and the authorities and the IDF and Netanyahu don't want the truth to be out there about the extent of the carnage.
And do you think events like this, we've got several hundred people here, a letter delivered to Downing Street, can it make a difference?
Well, we hope so, but who knows? I mean, I think you can't just stand back and do nothing, really.
And what about any end to the conflict? Can you see any end, if using your analytical capability?
I wish I could, but others are better placed than me.
My name's Owen Holdaway. I'm a freelance journalist specialising mostly in the Middle East. And basically, I think that the situation now has become so extreme with the level of death, particularly of freelance journalists and local journalists in Gaza, that, you know, I think that there really has to be much more of an out call of what's going on. And I think, like, the notion also of this both-sidedism, that basically that this is just the normal operation, is just it's completely unfathomable now. You know, the level of killing that the IDF have done towards journalists is just crazy. I mean, I think we're up to like 200-250 killed, and I think that kind of says something, that there's likely a new targeting of journalists, specifically their profession, for trying to suppress the news within what's coming out of Gaza. I mean, I think as well that it's very important now for the journalist community, and particularly the voices in the West that obviously have a much more stronger voice globally, generally, to really kind of so in solidarity, and because this what the rules of operations are very, very, very much changed, I think, with this situation. Because basically, if you have one side which are actively suppressing and trying to kill you, you know, then you can't expect you know, to have this equal impartiality. Our subservience really as a journalist is most primarily to tell truth to power, and I think it's really incumbent upon all journalists now to really stand in solidarity to what is going on and what is being attacked as our profession in Gaza.
So we've got several hundred people here, most of them journalists, and we've got a letter delivered to Downing Street. Will it change anything? Can it make a difference even?
I mean, the optimistic side of me says yes. I mean, I always go to the sort of Martin Luther King thing, you know, the moral arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. And I do think that, like, you know, whatever is this consistent campaign, although it may not initially seem like interchanging anything, I mean, being the fact that there was a double attack on you know, the hospital that killed journalists just yesterday, you know, and it doesn't really seem to be changing Israeli policy. I do think that, like, this consistentness, and it really is, I think, as well, like, incumbent upon the government, but also the rest of our journalist community, to really come together and unite and put pressure on, because this is not new. This is not normal. These attacks are not normal, and they've consistently, you know, I mean, when they attacked the Al Jazeera team, they said they attacked the press tent. You know what I mean? So these are not normal rules of engagement.
What about your colleagues? If you're working here in London, it's a massive centre nationally and internationally for English language news.
Yeah, I mean, I think very much so. I mean, I started out at the BBC, and I've got a lot of respect for that organisation. You know, I think it really did start, but it needs to show a lot more, I think, courage at this point towards it, like editorial courage and not timidity in this, because this issue has really, like, very much changed. We're all one big family, and although we have differences, we have different specialisms, we have different areas of expertise. You know, we really do need to support the news gatherers on the end, particularly in Gaza, who are doing a phenomenal job to get us this information, literally dying, and, you know, that needs to be really amplified within the press. The BBC, for instance, I mean, could employ local freelancers there. They could do things like that. There is options to, like, really encourage it. I mean, it's still going to be very risky, but they can generate news from that reason and get the truth out.
Well, that's the idea. Do you see an end to the conflict at all? I mean, this is using your crystal ball and a bit of analytical skills, but it doesn't seem to be finishing anytime soon.
No, I mean, like, my specialism's like very much like Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, that sort of stuff. So I don't know too much, like, about the kind of longness of that. But I mean, I do think that, like I said, the long arc of history lends toward justice, and I do think it will eventually sort of hopefully, I mean, you can't go on forever, and I think more solidarity and more international pressure will definitely push it towards that.
Hey, look, finally, right, we've just had a journalist here from LBC asking awkward questions of Israeli interviewees. Giving her cards, she's got the sack.
Yeah. Oh, is that true? Yeah. Is that true? Well, I think more power.
Do you think there's that sort of pressure going on
as well? Yeah. I mean, I'm of two minds about putting on the Israeli spy at this point, because they're obviously spouting disinformation. So, like, I mean, how much credibility? There was an old phrase I heard at the when I was at the BBC, Jeremy Paxman, I don't know if he's a Newsnight presenter, he used to say, I might be misquoting him, it might not have actually been him, but there was a quote going around attributed to him, was that there's no balance between a truth and a lie. So I think if you're actively lying, and I think it's a very difficult thing to see, because they've always got their immediate, like, I'm almost now to the point where I see their little PR spin points, and they're like waiting to push the news cycle on, give out their little like sound bites, and then hope that it will just pass. So I'm like almost like there needs to be a little bit more kind of almost labelling, warning, this is not, until and also like maybe like not taking press conferences, you know, just verbatim, you know, until, and put really putting pressure to what to put them to allow international journalists access, and that I think would be really like, if you, but this, we can't do this unless you give us international access.
Asa Winstanley, Electronic Intifada. I'm here to express solidarity with our colleagues in Gaza and in Palestine, killed by Israel.
So why do you think, it's quite obvious that Israel is deliberately targeting journalists, why?
Because they don't want the truth to get out. Simple as that. The Palestinian journalists are doing the best job. You know, David Lammy, the foreign secretary, said that there's no journalists in Gaza. And in saying that, he's erasing Palestinian journalists who've been doing the best job, you know. At Electronic Intifada, we're an international website, you know, based in Chicago and around the world. You know, I'm here in London, some of my colleagues are elsewhere. But we rely on our colleagues in Gaza, you know, our freelancers in Gaza and in the West Bank to get out the truth from the ground of what's actually happening, and they do the best job. And so Israel's very aware of that, and so Israel targets them.
You are obviously charting all this, but what about evidence of war crimes? Because more and more of it's coming out. Do you think there is any kind of change in the way that this has been reported? People like Lammy, etc., making statements, actually criticising the Israelis for the first time.
Yeah, that's true, and I think that's a reflection of the strength of the protests on the street, and just the, like, the wider Palestine solidarity movement, that people have been putting pressure on their politicians to actually do something. They haven't done, you know, to actually stop. I mean, it's not just complicity. This British government is actively involved in the genocide through intelligence gathering, training of Israeli soldiers in Britain, you know, economic ties, and lots of different ways, you know, weapons and so forth. And so, you know, they still maintain that despite all the pressure. But the fact that they're at least pressured into doing lip service to saying something, like you said, like Lammy, shows kind of the strength of the movement. But it's not enough.
Do you think it's just, cynical as just words? Is that it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, until they actually do something and stop their complicity, it's just words, yeah.
Okay, so obviously Electronic Intifada, but people are looking to try and find out what's going on. A lot of the mainstream press is obfuscating events. So where are good places, do you think? Where would you suggest?
The Electronic Intifada, obviously, Declassified UK have been doing some really good reporting, especially about the spy flights, the British involvement, and the pro-Israel lobby. There's Mondo Weiss in America. You know, in terms of print media, there's the Morning Star. You know, everyone forgets the Morning Star. That, you know, they do some good journalism. Off the top of my head, there's a few others. There's a good few others.
Look, yeah. Okay, so politically, yeah. It's another question. Jeremy Corbyn has just sort of started this new party. He's very pro-Palestine. What do you make of his new venture?
That's a big question. I am writing an article about it right now, so go to electronicintifada.net and see my analysis there. Soon, out probably next week. But what I would say in a nutshell is, I mean, I wrote a book about how Jeremy Corbyn was attacked by the mainstream media and the Labour Party establishment and by the pro-Israel lobby, crucially. And that was the most successful way he was attacked. And it was very successful in destroying the movement that brought him to the leadership of the Labour Party. And so I would say, unless he fights back against those attacks, the anti-Semitism smears specifically, the idea that that there's a massive anti-Semitism problem on the British left, unless he can fight back against that effectively, I think the the new party's not going to have much of a chance. You know, they have to go on the offensive on that. And, you know, his colleague Zara Sultana has kind of intimated recently that she would like to do that, to go in a more, go on the offensive more. So, you know, I think that's the only way they can win.
Well, it's all very well us pontificating here in London. We're not getting bombed. Yeah. Is there any hope, do you think, you know, Palestinians are listening, and some do. You know, have you got any... Have you got any hope to offer them? Because, you know, all this is so far is mostly words, isn't it? Do you see an end in sight to this?
Unfortunately, the answer to that is no. Like, I can't really offer them any hope. Like, we can only keep doing what we're doing and keep reporting the truth and just we're with you. You know, our governments are against you, but we, the people, are with you. Independent media is with you. And we'll keep on reporting the truth.
Okay, Ezwin Stanley, thanks very much for joining.
Yeah, no worries.
Mohsin Abbas is my name. I'm here because I'm going to show solidarity to all those journalists who are being killed on a daily basis. More journalists killed in this genocidal assault on Gaza than any other war that's been known, even more than the Second World War, as far as I know. Because
you're right, and the first put together, and the American War of Independence. More journalists killed this time.
Well, it's shocking because it shows that now there is absolutely no there's no red line. There are no conventions, Geneva or otherwise, that are valid when it comes to Israel, and nobody's stopping them. This is the other major issue. So the protest here outside Downing Street is really vital because it's time to shout for every one of the people who's being attacked, not just the kids, of course, that, you know, have been 100 a day being killed, or the women, shall we count the women, which is an overwhelming majority. The Israelis have now admitted 83% of the people killed have been civilians. It's a lot more than that. That's a lie as well. The reality is that they've targeted mercilessly professionals of every kind. They've done scholasticide, genocide, infanticide, and mediacide, I guess, now. That's what's going on. Yeah, they're killing more journalists.
Journocide.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. That's
anyway, why do you think it is in the Holy Land? It's amazing that this is happening now. I mean, you know, there's such more than if they go back 200 years, which is what we've got figures for. Suddenly, anyone that's reporting anything that they can get away with, the Israelis are now killing. This has never happened before in any war.
Because to shut out the truth, you need to stop the people who are getting the truth out. And those journalists have been the eyes and the ears of the Palestinians. Basically, without them, we'd have hardly got any news. The reality is journalists are banned, international journalists are banned from going into Gaza. If the Israelis are so clean and not doing all this genocide, why aren't international journalists allowed in to report normally and fairly? What are they scared of? What are they hiding? Well, what they're hiding is exactly what you've been seeing across all the social media. So it's stupid of the Israelis to even stop the international journalists, because the fact is it's all getting out anyway. And the international media is looking really stupid because they're failing in their duty as well to hold Israel to account. They've not talked about the number of journalists that are being killed. It's shocking, it's disgusting, it's absolutely abhorrent, and it needs to stop.
Okay, so, yeah, but why Israel? Why Palestine? This is the epicentre of this killing that's unprecedented now.
Well, the thing is that Israel's issue is that it has an ideology at the heart of it. And the ideology originally was a secular Zionism, but now it's actually mutated into this kind of Jewish supremacist theological doctrine, dogma, which necessitates the killing of what they call Amalek, i.e. everybody who is not a Jew, everybody who's not an Israeli. Essentially, they are capable of killing anybody. That's what their scriptures, the way they've interpreted their scriptures or misinterpreted them. I'm not an expert on the Torah, I'm not an expert on the Talmud. But the reality is that these people, the Jewish religious fascists who are there in Israel, are basically validating every kind of attack through their religion, and that is an affront to Judaism, that's an affront to Jewish people, that's an affront to the Jewish religion and faith. They're conflating it, they're deliberately dragging other Jewish people into the maelstrom, and they're trying to incite a kind of anti-Semitism or a Jewish hatred, which is really dangerous, because this is the kind of thing that Hitler did, and they're doing it for free to their own so-called people. The same Benjamin Netanyahu, who says he's a Jew or a Zionist, is actually creating a global problem in which Jews are now becoming center stage in terms of people's ire. Now, that is really dangerous, and of course, anybody who knows Judaism, those real Jewish people, sympathizes with those Jews who've been dragged into this. Those who don't know and have been mizzled into supporting the Israeli fascist apartheid state, well, they are at least hopefully also waking up to the danger, because as they say, the chicken will comes home to roost, basically. And if we're not careful, we're going to find the same kind of anti-Semitism that perhaps the Nazis, etc., kicked off as a propaganda campaign. But this time, it's Benjamin Netanyahu and this global Zionist movement which is bringing the tribulations on the Jews. And we all need to prevent that.
Well, look, we're stood in Whitehall, opposite Downing Street. It was Britain that had the Palestine mandate after the First World War. Some would say the British were given a very bloody nose by the Zionist terrorists in the late 1940s. Others, the British have been complicit in this. And I think it's fair to say, with the genocide, the British government has been complicit. Where do you stand on how responsible the people across the road over the decades have been for what's going on right now?
The British establishment is completely responsible, without a doubt, because the British people had nothing to do with this. As usual, the situation was something that was engineered by the establishment in order to create, basically, the maintenance of a colony. The colonialist British attitude, the imperialist British continuation, is there, is still there. Israel is the only country in the world which is openly executing colonialism live as we see it. And we see the result of that. It's the same kind of genocides which, say, the British oversaw within the famine, for instance, in Bengal, or other famines that they oversaw. The same kind of things that the people, the Belgians did in the Congo, or other European colonialists. What we're seeing Israel is doing is imitating exactly what they did. So we've still got colonialism alive and well, and this is why we need to oppose Israel. We need to change we need to outlaw Zionism, we need to dismantle Israel, and we need to have a sane, democratic, sensible state brought about with the Palestinians' own, their own sovereignty, with their own empowerment to bring about a peace settlement in that region. And it can't be imposed by them by anybody from the outside, and certainly they can't coexist with Zionism or coexist with Israel as it stands today.
Well, I know you're quite busy online and elsewhere. Whereabouts can people find and follow your work?
Well, I'm most visible on the Deep Dive Perspective podcast. You can find us on YouTube, Instagram. Anyway, if you look for Deep Dive Perspective podcast, we'll be there.
Mohsin Abbas, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Cheers.